You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I know sometimes people send me bios and they're like thousands of words, but in some cases I like to read nearly the whole bio. And that's because we've earned our bios. We have. And so we have to be shameless about them. And some people have just done a lot of shit and deserve to have their bio read. So get ready for a long bio because my guest is accomplished. Melanie Vesey is a comedian, actress, writer, director, and owner of Promotional Rescue. Her comedy special slash album, Wild Animal, is available to watch on Amazon, Reverie TV, and to listen to on all major streaming platforms. She hosts the Promotional Rescue talk show, where she has real conversations with people about how they deal with self-promotion. In addition to her TV comedy spot on Laugh After Dark on Amazon, she's opened for Marc Maron, tweeted for Tig Notaro, won round 4 of the U.S. comedy contest, and been Comedian of the Week on the Jackie Cashian and Lori Kilmartin podcast. Notably, she co-starred with Jim Carrey in the Andy Kaufman biopic Man on the Moon. Melanie wrote, directed, and produced 3 short films that were official selections at several film festivals. She has her own promotions consulting firm, PromotionalRescue.com, where she helps award-winning independent artists and small business owners grow their audience and visibility through private coaching and workshops. She lives with her brilliant and loving wife, her son, and a dog named Fig. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Melanie Vesey.
Hi, that was so great. And I almost got a little emotional hearing all of that.
You did? Well, babe, you earned it. So like, yeah. Let's not be modest. Fuck modesty.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a life, man. It's been a life. So
okay,
thank you so much for featuring all of that. Yes. Thank you.
Which is so funny because the first line in my script of questions is you have lived a life, and life is in capitals.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to be able to get to it all in 1 hour, but I do want to do the highlights.
Yes.
I guess we'll start with a trauma point.
Yeah.
Why not start with trauma?
Absolutely. I think that's where it all starts, right?
Okay, yeah. Oh, I mean. Yes. All comedy starts from trauma.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to read from another part of your bio.
Yeah.
In 1999, Melanie faced one of the greatest challenges of her life when she was shot by her ex-girlfriend, a New York City police officer. In her own way of processing this traumatic experience, she wrote and produced a one-woman show called Bullets Bounce Off. Melanie, I have in my life...
Yes.
I have in my life experienced really a lot of dyke drama, high dyke drama. And I have witnessed other people's dyke drama. Mm-hmm. But I will say this for me is the biggest dyke drama. And I didn't see it, but just hearing about it kind of frightens me.
Yeah. It is advanced topics. And I don't mean to laugh so crazily. Believe me, it is hands down the worst thing that has ever happened to me. And it's been a minute. So it's been, you know, 20 years plus, whatever. I have had a tremendous amount of time to process and heal from that transaction. The only reason why I'm laughing is because people's reaction to it, they don't know how to deal with it. And they're usually dealing with it for the first time. And so I'm always just totally like, yeah, isn't it bananas? And I'm often very challenged by the fact that I was given this storyline. Like I'm totally like, couldn't we have done something else? Couldn't I have broken an ankle or just, you know, like couldn't something else happened? But it's the way that it went down. And, yeah. And it has truly molded me into the person that I am today. I wish I could be like, I'm so grateful for all the thing that's happened to me. I'm not. It was horrible. I wish it didn't happen. I wish it hadn't have happened. But that was the way that it went down.
And was your ex-girlfriend charged with a crime? And was she discharged from the police department?
So this is the painful thing about this. No. And so what's so interesting about my situation is that, like, I was introduced to how the police deal with shootings, how they deal with cop crimes. I have dealt with this firsthand by watching how they dealt with me, how they manipulated the situation, how they dealt with me in the hospital, how they managed and controlled this whole situation. And I was in litigation with the New York City Police Department for $2.5 million, and I never saw a dime. And they ruined my career. So at the time that I was shot, my movie was playing in the theaters. I mean, I'd gotten this dream role co-starring with Jim Carrey. I was on set with Courtney Love, the entire fucking set of Taxi. I was working with a 2-time Academy Award winning director. I was working with Academy Award winning hair, makeup, costume. I had arrived at this career that I had worked so hard for. I put myself through acting school. I graduated number one in my class, Stella Adler. This is what I had literally like clawed my way to get to, was to be in a movie with dream people. Mm-hmm. And you know, this happened with my ex, and it ruined my career. Like it ruined my life, essentially, is what it did. So anyway, so I was getting back to like how cops deal with situations. So I feel like right now, and how we're seeing things because of cell phones, we see how police deal with these situations, and we watch them get off. The cops who fucking murdered Breonna Taylor, the cops who, and I'm not a person of color. I'm just saying like how cops deal. If you just take the moment of how cops deal with cop crimes, them doing whatever it is that they're doing, murdering people, hurting people, whatever it is.
And then protecting their own, right? Because it's usually not like one cop, you know, just like hanging out in a dark alley, although that could have been the case for you. But often there are other cops, and they're basically colluding. You know, they're looking at someone step on someone's neck, right?
It is so deep. It is so wide. It is so, that's why when they're like, we need police reform, and my brain just melts out of my ears. And I'm like, I don't know how they would do it. People would have to be so motivated to fix this situation. I do believe that there are good cops, but by design, they are not quote unquote good if they are protecting other cops that are doing bad shit. Absolutely. So the reason why I didn't see a dime of that transaction, so she was off duty when she shot me. However, she shot me with her police issue rifle, with her police issue gun, which was a 38. She was drunk at the time. So I'm here to tell you kids, alcohol and weapons do not go together. This is a domestic thing. This is what happens. Mm-hmm. When you add those two things together, the statistics just go through the fucking roof. They were just totally like, she was off duty. Sorry. And I'm like, but she had become an undercover narcotics officer. I'm like, she would step into situations when she was off duty all the time. If she would see something happening, she would fucking reveal herself as a police officer and handle situations. And I was just totally like, I don't know, man. This seems like this, you would be responsible. And also too, she had gotten in trouble for other things previous to our relationship. So she was in trouble with, you know, aggression and things that had happened while she was on duty. Mm-hmm. Essentially, they were just totally like, no. But here's the thing. 3 days after I was shot, I then got a letter that she had claimed bankruptcy. So I couldn't go after her either. So they were just totally like, sorry, kid, see you later. You just now have to deal with this.
And how did you come back from it? Seem like I've met you in person. You seem pretty well adjusted.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the scars that we hold that are between our ears are sometimes, yes, I am wildly grateful. I cannot tell you how grateful and blessed and lucky I feel that a bullet passed through my body at point blank range with no structural damage to my body. Now, I was shot in the leg right above my knee, so the bullet literally passed through my leg, like from the outside of my right leg to the inside of my. So I have two holes on the inside and outside of my leg, and I'm lucky that it wasn't an inch lower and it didn't blow off my kneecap. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky that it didn't get me in the face or in the gut. I'm lucky that it didn't kill me. It didn't put me in a wheelchair. I'm not shitting in a bag. Like it didn't do a million things to me that it could have done to me. So yes, when you meet me, you don't know that happened to me. However,
but I meant psychologically. I didn't mean physically. I meant
exactly.
So that, like, how do you come back from a trauma like that?
So yeah. I was very, very lucky. I'm a sober person. I'm sober 26 years. I'm very out about that, which goes against the traditions, but I do feel like I can only speak for myself, that as a person in recovery, I want people to know that they can recover long term. Mm-hmm. And so at the time that I was shot, I had 5 years sober. So I had a community of people around me that knew how to be of service, which is very difficult. Being of service is not something that comes natural to most people. I don't know, not the people that I have always experienced in my life. So I had, a community of people around me who helped me. That was kind of like, you know, the day-to-day stuff. Mentally was I just leaned into, I have literally been to every kind of self-help thing in the world. And I would literally go to the opening of a window if I thought it would fucking help my brain more. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I am such a searcher and a seeker. And I did that with drugs and alcohol as well. I was looking for God. I was looking for my companions. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, doing that as somebody who was using drugs and alcohol and sex and money and whatever it was that I was using back there, to now use it in a normal, healthy way. I just kept on going. Now, it could have taken me out. I mean, I had every reason. I was on pain meds. A terrible thing had happened that aligned me with my victimhoodism. You know what I mean? To be a victim, victimhoodism. I don't know if that's a word. I'm making it up. You heard it here first.
Victimhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, to be a victim, it really activated that part of me in a very big way. I literally have just been trudging the road by getting all the fucking help I could. And there's no other way around it.
And it sounds like professional help and peer support was really big for you.
Yeah, I'm incredibly lucky to live in a bubble of my choosing. I have a fantastic chosen family of, you know, people who are plugged in, who are wonderful, who are patient. I'm not easy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a big personality. I have a lot of baggage. That's why my comedy special is called Wild Animal. Like, I truly feel like I'm a wild animal that's inside like a dress, like trying to act normal. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like holding a cup of tea, like don't notice that I'm about to like push everything over. You know what I mean? Like, I feel crazy inside sometimes. I'm very, very lucky to have a fantastic community around me.
Hey, let's take a commercial break. No, I mean, that might be a lot to digest if you've never heard the story before.
Yeah.
And so, okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to pay the bills from our amazing sponsors and advertisers. And when we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk about your connection with reality TV. So stay with us. Hey, everyone. You know, I want to feel better about what I eat, but sometimes it's hard to prepare healthy meals that also taste good. With Saqqara, you can reach your health goals without sacrificing taste. Saqqara is a nutrition company that focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat. Their organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with powerful plant-based ingredients, and they're designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. The menu of creative, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners changes weekly, so you'll never get bored. And it's delivered fresh anywhere in the U.S. I don't know if I've been more excited about a new advertiser. I absolutely love the Saqqara meals. One of my favorites is the Niçoise salad, which is absolutely delicious. It's got all the favorites of a traditional Niçoise, but it's all plant-based and still just as tasty. The dressing, oh my God, so, so good. I would buy it by the bottle. Along with delicious plant-rich meals, Saqqara also offers daily wellness essentials like supplements and herbal teas to support your nutrition. Experience the power of plants as medicine with their best-selling Metabolism Super Powder. Made with organic raw cacao, it works to boost energy, eliminate bloating, minimize sugar cravings, and reduce fatigue. And right now, Saqqara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to saqqara.com/Tristan. Or you can enter code Tristan at checkout. That's Saqqara, SAQARA.com/Tristan, TRISTAN, to get 20% off your first order. Saqqara.com/Tristan. You will not be disappointed. This food is amazing, and so are their supplements. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I am talking with Melanie Vesey today, who's a comedian, actress, writer, director, also a promotional guru, for those of you looking for one. I tease this thing about reality TV. So another part of your bio that's fascinating is that you had a baby with Project Runway winner Jeffrey Sebilia. Okay, a couple things on this one.
Yeah.
Were you, when they do the thing where they go home during the break where they're making their collection, were you actually filmed with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tim Gunn came...
Yes, I saw it. Okay, so this is like the first time I saw Melanie Vesey on television. And first of all, I remember very clearly turning to whoever I was watching it with and going, queer? Yeah. The radar's going off. Like, I understand they're alternative and the tattoos and artists, and I know all the code words, but also,
hi,
that woman likes women.
Yeah, you're not the first person to tell me that. Like, I've had so many people be like, my gaydar was going off. Yeah, I mean, I had a mohawk at the time and, you know, was kind of probably working all of the indicators. And yeah, absolutely. We had Tim Gunn at our house. And I was, Tim Gunn came to our house. And then I also went to the actual you know, set where they were doing, we were, and Harrison and I were on Fashion Week, you know, in New York City. And it was a really, really, fantastic. I mean, Heidi Klum being on the runway, winning $100,000. And it was a very high energy, event. It certainly was. Yeah.
I could only imagine.
Yeah.
So you had this baby and, you talked about your special. So Wild Animal is your stand-up special. You can watch it in video or you can listen to it on audio. And in it, you talk about this baby growing up and you having a conversation about sex with him.
Yeah.
I'm going to just play that.
Well, not sex with my son. So that.
No, I'm sorry. That was worded badly, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah, it was just the way it came out. So
you had a sex conversation with your son.
Yes.
Okay.
The way that it came out. Yes, it was totally fine. Yeah. So the name of the clip is called Explaining Lesbian Sex. So, and it was to my, you know, very, you know, adolescent son at the time. And it was, yes. And then hilarity ensues. Yes.
Hilarity ensued. Okay. So we are going to play a clip. Just take a listen.
Oh my God. Now here's the thing. I have so much trauma around this. I don't know what your sex ed was. My sex ed was listening to my mom have sex with her four husbands, which will turn you gay in a fucking heartbeat, let me tell you right now. So I have so much trauma around this. I don't want him to know I have sex. I don't want him to hear me have sex. I'm just like, I'm just a smooth unit. Yes, I married this lady, but like, we don't fucking do anything. She's just here. We don't touch, we don't do anything. There's nothing. There's nothing to see here. There's nothing. I am freaking out, right? So he comes in and he's totally like, calm down. Calm down. I know what that means. He's assuring me he knows what fucking means. I'm dying! Like, I'm dying! And I'm like, oh my God, if you have any questions, please, please let me know. I'm an open book, please! He's like, calm down. And he leaves the room. I'm still dying, but I can't text my wife because he can see all the text messages, so I'm just totally like, But a minute later, he comes back in and he goes, actually, I do have a question. So is that like possible? Fucking? And I was like, oh, okay. So I had to explain penetration. To my son, but I didn't want to blow his mind, you know, and tell him that we use toys. Like, I didn't want to, like, I was like, I didn't want to tell him, like, listen, your stepmom's a size queen, and, and we both love big black cocks, but not the ones that are attached to people. We like the ones that sleep in drawers, you know what I mean? Like, hello, goodbye, like, I didn't want to freak him out. I did not want to freak him out. He was like, so what do you use? And I was like, we use our hands. And he goes, where does the sperm come out? And I go, it doesn't. And then I literally saw the synapses fire in his brain, like he goes, do you mean to tell me you're having sex for fun? And I go, yes, all the time. And he goes, question.
So your son is inadvertently seeing your text messages between you and your wife.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like you're having like a dirty talk session at all, but obviously he got an earful. And so there's I have a few follow-up questions.
Yeah. Question.
First of all, one of the things that I found most endearing about both of you was that you were like, hey, if you have any questions, which is like what you're supposed to say when you're a sex positive parent, you know, you're supposed to say, I'm an open book, and you said it. Mm-hmm. And then he left and I could see the terror on your face in the bit. And then he comes back and he goes, oh, wait, I do have questions.
Yeah.
So that's a bold move for you know, a teenager or or a tween.
Yeah.
So I love that he had all these follow-up questions and he got really into, like, he got really into it and you got really into it.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious about if that sort of set the stage for ongoing conversations about sex in your house.
Yes. So I, you know, I am I'm a Gen Xer. I'm a product of boomers. Nobody talked to me about sex. I was introduced to sex in a way that was very uncomfortable for me. My mom was married like 4 times by the time I was 10. There were always boyfriends, and you know, there always just seemed to be this like two modes where it was like my mom was falling in love with somebody where the sex was happening all the time in her room, or there was the divorce. You know what I mean? So I was being introduced to sex in an interesting way that was, in my opinion, kind of damaging. You know what I mean? And I also, in my own, you know, sex journey, I didn't even know I liked women until I was 26 years old. I came out late. And then I went, after I was shot, I went back into the closet. Like, my sexuality has been a very, very challenging, bumpy, messy road. And so I think that when I had a child, I really wanted to like lay the groundwork for being like, hey, I am a parent to you, but I really do want to kind of partner you in this thing called life. And I want you not to have these, I just didn't want that overall feeling of like, we're not here to help you. I want him to feel like there's help. And I also feel like in setting the stage for teenagers, you got to start laying that groundwork almost ASAP to be like, you can trust me, which means that when you have that crazy question about Twizzlers and whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you're not sitting there like telling them they're screwed up or how dare you, you know, you're not, you can't do that. You actually have to actually be, if you're going to be a safe person, you actually have to be a safe person.
And you have to answer questions and you have to do it truthfully, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the amazing thing is that my wife, who is much younger than me, she's 18 years younger than me. And so she's even better at this. I come to the table with a lot of baggage that I have learned to unpack and not always feature, but she's a little bit more kind of like, she doesn't have as much baggage as I do. So that's why I kept on saying like, I couldn't call my wife, because sometimes she helps me acclimate, because sometimes I can overshare, sometimes I undershare. She can sometimes help me be a little bit more right-sized. And so I was kind of on my own with that one, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't reach out to her. And I'm actually am very proud of the way that it went down. And in a long-winded way to get around to answering your question, like, we really do say here, if you tell us what's going on, you will not get in trouble. And we've really had to follow through with that. So that means about everything, drugs, sex, you know, scary things, whatever. I mean, as a teenager, you're searching in this world. And I know that for myself, it took me to some dark ass corners that I was in some not safe places while on that search. And so I've always said to my kid, like, you send me a text message day or night, I will be there. You know what I mean? To kind of help you with that. But laying that groundwork starts way before they're teenagers. Like, I feel like you can't plug in when they're teenagers. That's when they're telling you to fuck off. You know what I mean? So
yes.
So this conversation, you know, he was probably maybe like, I don't know, 10 or 11, 12. Like, I can't remember now, but it, you know, now he's 15, 16. And we have very, very open conversations here at the house. Very open conversations.
And does that ever cause conflict with your co-parent? Reminder, Project Runway winner, Jeffrey Sibilia.
That was so funny. I can't control what happens at his house.
Right.
Which is, you know, I've worked diligently to help myself feel okay with that. When we started co-parenting, you know, Harrison was, you know, 2 years old. It was very, very, very hard and painful to hand him over to a co-parent in another house. Jeff and I do not always agree on the best ways of parenting. And I have had to have a very clear understanding with myself that that is the relationship he wants to have with his son. It is not a reflection on me. So when we've had conflict or when I haven't agreed with whatever he has decided to do, I'm like, that's the relationship he wants to have with his son. And kids know what's going on. Kids know what happens at what parent's house and how to do it. This is what I do at my house. I can only control what happens here. I have a beautiful, a wonderful, amazing wife who is 1,000 times smarter than I am. And like I said, she helps acclimate me at times because I do come with so much fear and anxiety and baggage and stuff. So I can only focus on what happens here.
That's just really mature and thoughtful of you. No, it really is.
I mean, it didn't come easy. Let me tell you.
Okay. It didn't come easy. You got there.
Yeah. I mean, I had to go to like a whole 12-step program to help me not be, the wife in Goodfellas, like pressing all the buttons, like Janet Rossi, you know what I mean? Like right. I had to learn to not be like, oh, I'm going to get in my car with the baby and drive over there and give you a what, you know what I mean? Like that's not going to help anybody. That's not.
No.
Yeah, no. Even though that is what I want to do. You know what I mean? Like, again, mm-hmm. wild animal, you know what I mean? So, and I've gotten a lot of support and help to do that. That is not my first instinct. Like I said, a whole 12-step program devoted to me doing that.
So let's talk about your brilliant wife.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Are you looking for a third?
Oh my God. I mean, it's so funny. Every once in a while, I think the only reason why we would want a new wife is to just do more wifely duties, like just, you know, pick up, drop off, you know, more dishes, more walking of the dog. Her and I are set. We couldn't have another person if it was like a romantically or sexually involved. Like we have enough to deal with already. You're adorable.
Well, I'm totally disqualified because I, as anyone who knows me knows, I am horrible wife material. I have said this publicly many times.
Amazing.
That I need a wife. Yeah. So I would only be a sort of sex play thing.
Adorable.
But you can, you know, I can play a long game. That's fine.
That's great. That's so great.
Okay, I've embarrassed myself.
No, it's all good. Hey, you know, we're adorable. We are an adorable couple.
You're fucking adorable. If you follow Melanie on Instagram, there's like just all this love that's like gushing. That was funny, Tristan. Gushing out of these posts. It's just you can tell how much you love and respect each other. You can tell that you're a source of joy for each other, especially when things are awful, you know, going on around you. Yeah, it's just super clear.
Yeah, I couldn't be more grateful only because, you know, I was 40 when I met my wife. I had thrown in the towel. Like, I was like, dude, I go for people that are trying to kill me. You know what I mean? And like, I go for fucking the craziest transactions. I was so happy to find somebody who was as stable and as wonderful and as beautiful. And I mean, it was truly the reward for whatever fucking craziness I had to walk through. This relationship was truly the reward for that. If that's how that works, I don't know. You know what I mean? It worked out. Thank God.
Okay. We're going to take another break. Coming up, we're going to talk about some more hard stuff. And also why you should hire Melanie to learn all about promotion. So stay with us. All you vulva owners out there, do you want to be able to maintain strong pelvic floor muscles and have better orgasms? I've got the tool for you. Intensity by Pormoi is a sexual health and stimulation device that tightens and tones your pelvic floor muscles and your vagina. Intensity helps you do your Kegel exercises better by automatically exercising the muscles of the pelvic floor for you. It's a really great item. And I also want to add that if you or someone you love can't imagine buying a sex toy like a dildo or a vibrator, this could be a really good option because it's different. It's a wellness product. It's the opposite of a bachelorette gag gift. And it's got cool features, including the internal portion that not only vibrates, but also inflates to give you real resistance for exercise. And the vibrating external portion intensifies the whole experience. Plus, there are 10 levels of muscle stimulation and 5 speeds. Pormoi is offering our listeners $25 off of Intensity when you go to pormoi.com and enter code Tristan at checkout. That's $25 off when you go to pormoi.com and use promo code Tristan, T-R-I-S-T-A-N. Pormoi.com, the code is Tristan. Intensity by Pormoi, Kegels with a kick. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. If you haven't seen her stand-up, a good introduction is the special Wild Animal. I'm talking about comedian, actress, writer, director Melanie Vesey. Melanie also, in a time of COVID, has pivoted and has a lot of online shows. So you can spend an hour once a week with Melanie. The show she's doing right now is the antidepressant show. Is that right?
Yeah.
And speaking of antidepressants, you talk a lot about mental health, your own mental health in your comedy. And, you know, pretty much all the comedians I talk to are really shockingly honest about their mental health. And I mean shockingly because this is still such a stigmatized subject. This is still something we haven't normalized talking about at the dinner table. This is still something that I think people are taught to hide, to cover up, to not share.
Yeah.
So why is it important for you to talk about it and talk about it so openly?
Like I said, I feel like visibility is so important. And like I said, I came out, you know, it took me a very long time to discover myself. I think I am still, that's not true. I'm not necessarily still discovering myself. I think I'm coming into acceptance of myself at this point because I am who I am. And I, you know, as a young girl living in, you know, the suburbs of Detroit in the 70s and 80s, I didn't know that I could be who I am today. I didn't know, you know, about being, you know, queer or, you know, the sexual journey that I was on, or, you know, the ability to earn, have my own business, or, you know, I just didn't know any of this stuff. And I just was watching everything on TV and, you know, so I, you know, watching Three's Company. And I think that that's why I've been so locked in fantasy land for so long.
And still you don't want to have a threesome. Okay. Keep going.
Exactly. So, you know, so I feel like in talking about this stuff as openly as I can, and as messy as and weird and up and down and sideways and all over the fucking place, I want people to know that somebody else is doing it. I just don't want people to ever think that they're alone or that there isn't, I don't know, that someone can come out on the other side. I just feel like the feelings that I have felt over the years have been so deep and so wide and so powerful. I still feel very broken inside, despite 26 years of like the hardest work on myself. But I also have people who are farther down the road from me, people who are, you know, like the Maria Bamfords in my life who give me so many gems and nuggets, who are just totally like, I shake because I take, you know, this certain medication, and she's figured out how to deal with it with her comedy, you know, and that gives me so much freedom to be like, wow, this could be even worse. And I could still be wildly successful. Oh, I see.
I mean, for those of you who don't know the comedian Maria Bamford, I absolutely worship the ground she walks on. I love her shit. I was first introduced to her because she opened for a songstress who I also just deeply appreciate, Bridget Everett. And when she came on the stage, I was like, oh my God, what?
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about when I first met you, there were a bunch of people talking about mental health. And then you sort of chimed in. And it was like, I had like whiplash. I was all of a sudden like, wait, what? This sounds totally different than anything anyone else has said. I can totally relate to this. It's so real. It's so authentic. It's like woken me up.
Great.
That's what I think you do.
Thank you. Well, that's an honor. I mean, I really do feel like that's what visibility does. And that's why I feel like no matter what your experience, you know, to be able to talk about it. And for whatever reason, I feel comfortable on stage with a microphone in my face. And so I do feel a freedom to talk about that stuff. I also feel the freedom to talk about it because I had the experience So it's kind of like, you know, the awareness, the acceptance, the action, right? It's like, I had the awareness of it. I had the acceptance of it. And then I could take action on it. It's like, I can talk about it because a lot of it is behind me. I can talk about, you know, the one-liners about, you know, my experience with, you know, a baby daddy or trauma or whatever, because I can put it into like a bite-sized doggy pill. You know what I mean? That's like covered in peanut butter. Like, I'm just totally like, here it is. Here's the information. You know what I mean? Like, it's really taken a long time. I don't think I could have fashioned this stuff in the same way in my 20s. This is why I feel like I'm literally, my life right now is the best it's ever been, which is why I have a whole bit that's called Life's Great at the End of the World. I'm happy. I have a beautiful, wonderful wife. I have an amazing relationship with my kid. I have figured out how to earn without having a terrible boss. I mean, I'm my own terrible boss, but you know, I mean,
right.
I have figured out life, and unfortunately the whole world is crumbling right now. You know what I mean? But I feel very grateful, wildly grateful, that I have my two feet underneath me and a solid foundation in my life. But it has taken a minute to do that.
Okay, let's shift gears.
Yeah.
Tell me about Promotional Rescue and the Promotional Rescue talk show.
So I, years and years ago, worked at a record label, and I was doing, vice president of PR, and I learned how to do PR. And what I learned was that when I helped people promote themselves, I really noticed a common thread with them, that it wasn't just like, you know, oh, this is how you share on social media and this is how you get press. I noticed that a lot of their feelings, that their ideas and thoughts about who they were and their visibility being seen, the way that people reacted to them, was very powerful to them. I mean, I would have people crying in front of me. They were afraid of the visibility. They were afraid of being, you know, seen as a fraud or trolled or whatever those fears were. We all have them. You know, they're individual to all of us. Like, what are your fears? And I just noticed that I was doing way more than just PR, because I was working with these people and holding their hands. And I was like, I think I'm doing Promotional Rescue, which is also PR. So it's kind of funny that it worked out the way that it was. I also know too that based on my trauma, so after I was shot, I tried to keep my acting career going for a bit, and I just couldn't. I was just crying in auditions. Like, I was just such an open wound walking around this world. And then I got so angry and so bitter that, like, I still am very angry and bitter that someone robbed me of the amazing thing that was happening in my career. And I've never been able to get that back at that level. I can tell you that I could put my fist through a window about it. Do I take action on it? No. You know what I mean? But I do know that I can spot this stuff now with people. So when I see them retreating, because I retreated and I hid and I got away from everybody and everything, and I have a lot of regret about that. And so I feel like through my tools of being able to be this person that knows a lot about promotion, but also coupled with my understanding of the trauma and what people do when they retreat from being of service to their visions, I kind of married those two things together. So when people come to work with me, it's more than just, like, even I've had phone calls with people today when they were talking about, oh, I won't finish the project or whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, why? What's going on? Like, let's just take 2 minutes to address that. What is up? You know what I mean? Like, well, my mom's online. I don't want her to see me. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, okay. You're going to have to be seen. If you aren't right about that, then your operating system is going to get in the way. And you could take a couple actions that I give you, but it's not going to last. You're just going to put your foot on the brake again. And then you're going to retreat. And then another year is going to go by, and you're going to miss another opportunity. So that's essentially what my business is about. It's a little bit more than just being kind of like a social media, you know, person or what have you. And the talk show came from, I just feel like when you're that person on the outside and you're looking at that friend who's got a book that's killing it or podcast that's doing awesome, and you just think they're just smooth sailing, and it's, they're not. they are, you know, they've got their own issues. They had their own struggles. So I feel like by having these conversations in the same way that I'm just totally like, expose it. You know what I mean? So I'm talking with people about what they've learned, what their best tips and tricks, what they go to, the apps that they use, the mindset, the failures, the successes, and what have you, so that people can hear those honest conversations so that they can know, oh, this is how I do this, you know?
I really relate to this part that you're talking about with sort of the emotional component of promotion. So I coach sexuality professionals, and I'm someone who started in the field very early before it was really a field in 1998. And so the way that I've learned marketing is totally trial and error. There was no class for it. That I could apply to sex, especially because there's a lot of censorship and issues with putting your work out there and using certain kinds of language and all that stuff, right? You can't like hand out flyers for your fisting workshop at the PTA meeting, for example, right? So it's like, there's some differences. And so when I work with professionals, I've also noticed that I've come up with these tools, right? Like, oh, you've got to have a mailing list. Capture everyone's email. Always capture their email. It's one of my things, right? Because I've had a list forever. But when you get underneath it, there's discomfort there.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not just about like sort of telling people what's worked for you or what might work for them. But ultimately, they reveal, oh, I'm not comfortable with this. And I think people have a real challenge with self-promotion. And I think this is especially true for people socialized to be women and other marginalized folks who are basically taught, don't brag. You know, when a man tells you of his accomplishments, he's like smart and confident. And when a woman tells you about her, her accomplishments, she's braggy. She's full of herself, right? And because women and other marginalized folks are not taught to take up space, both physical and psychic space, public space, I think there are these extra hurdles to get over.
Absolutely. And then layer on top of that, if you have had any sort of trauma on top of that. And that could be whether that's in, you know, in real life, you know, like for myself, like I had something so horrible happen to me and I could not walk on this planet. It was so uncomfortable. Of course, I just wanted to turn everything off. You know what I mean? And then, or people have trauma online, you know, I mean, I talk to people and they're like, yeah, I had a, you know, my ex-husband used my Facebook against me in court and I, you know, with my kids. And I'm like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Like that is a real fear. That's not me just being like, get over it and post 15 times a day on Instagram. You know what I mean? It's like, no, no, dude, that's a person. That is their life. But they also have a vision and a dream. And I just want to be for somebody what was never for me. Do you know what I mean? Like I didn't have somebody being like, hey, I'm noticing you're flushing your entire career down the toilet. You know what I mean? Like I'm noticing this is the second career you flushed down the toilet. You know what I mean? Like I just wanted someone to partner me and notice what I was doing was very damaging to my ultimate vision. And so I feel like we do need someone outside of ourselves. And I'm telling you this because I do this for a living. My business has sustained me and taken care of my family and what have you for years now. And I still have to go back to what I teach people. I still have to pull out the checklist, you know, because I feel like when you're working on your own thing, it's like your fucking head leaves the building. I don't even know what happens. Like you just get like sideswiped by like some sort of antique idea about what to do, or you've got this urgency. Oh, I've got to get it out now. I've got to do it or whatever. Like, I'm trying to unplug all of that stuff. No, no. Start at the top. Start with the basics. Start with writing this, then doing that. And I'm like, oh, okay, right. That's how we do it. It's just a very interesting thing that happens to us, and it happens to everyone, which is why I want people to know that. And Maria Bamford is a client. I've been working on her stuff for years, her social media, her website. I built her website. So I have seen what it's like for this person, not just as a person that's performing on stage, but also behind the scenes. How they deal with this. and the struggles that they have. And they are, it's universal. The struggles that people even have, even as a famous person, is the same that you might be having as someone who's just starting out. It's the same universal ideas that people struggle with.
Okay, that makes me think of two things. One is that I feel like part of the reason is that the stakes are really high when the thing you're promoting is you. You know, it's like when people say, like, don't read the comments or don't take that personally. But if someone trolls you and says, like, you're not a good writer or you're not funny, that feels like it sort of cuts to the core of, like, your self-identity and your value and your worth. Because I feel like if you asked me to market or promote, like, the natural white cheddar Cheetos, I don't know why that just came to
that
mind.
That sounds delicious.
Except it's like, it's total bullshit. It's still the fucking Cheetos, but, you know, it's like no chemicals or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel better about eating them, let me just say.
Yeah.
If I feel like I was promoting Cheetos and there are people who like Cheetos and then people who don't like Cheetos, you know, the investment is pretty low for me. Mm. But when you're promoting you, oh.
Yeah, that is the kicker, which is why people then come up with things to separate themselves from what they do, right? So they'll create a name, right? So when I go to people's Instagram and meanwhile they're in real life, their name is like, you know, whatever, Kristen Smith, but online they are, you know, Flower 65, you know, and I'm like, oh, we do all of this stuff to not be seen and not be found, or to put like a barrier in between it and us. So usually what I do is I hold people's hand through the process of kind of like pulling them very slowly out of this like cave that they're in, to be like, you're going to brand your name. Because if you are you, so for me as Melanie Vesey, I am Melanie Vesey on all my platforms. I am a stand-up comedian. That's my creative life. Now, when I started my business, I put it under my name at first because my business wasn't kind of like a thing that was popping off at first. It was brand new. And then once I branded it and figured it out, and once I told people what promotional rescue was, and then they understood that, oh, that's so clear. And also too, I just wanted to have a different way of promoting it that's separate from me. And so I started separate social media accounts. But it's very interesting what happens to people when they do have to step into like, oh, I am the thing. Mm-hmm. And I do know that when you start to also figure out, so the first thing I have people do is to write your bio, right? Like that bio that you read about me. And so it's like, write it down. What is it? If you don't know what it is, how is anybody else going to know what it is? And you don't have to put everything there. And I also know too, that like when you said like about the person that's kind of trolling you. So I have had clients with like hundreds of thousands of followers. There will always be a very small percentage of people that have something to say. And you could make that very small percentage of people very happy just by disappearing. That one person that says something stupid, you could make them happy, just one person. Or you could make the other 100,000 people happy that you're there. You know what I mean? So I think as in our minds, when as cavemen, we had to find, we had to overcome danger. And I think in our minds, we still, like when I perform comedy and I see one person who's just not having me, and I focus in on that. It's hard for me sometimes to see the other 99 people who are like laughing in the room. And I'm like that one person, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? What is going on? You know what I mean? I feel like we want to like overcome whatever that is, but it is not the majority. And we need to take our eyes off of the thing that's hurting us and putting it on the thing that's helping us, and to breathe more life into the thing that's helping us to realize our vision and to realize what we're here to do. It's just a shift of perception.
I would also argue, though, that this is the most challenging time ever for promotion because of the proliferation of social media and the fucking internet. You know, I think back to like, oh, that article I wrote for On Our Backs in 1998. Was I inclusive enough when I talked about oral sex? Well, guess what? That's not on the internet. You got to dig that shit up like on eBay, or you have to go to the Lesbian Herstory Archives and you got to figure out what issue it was. And it's like, you know, you got to dig it up. Whereas now everything, you know, every tweet is screenshot. Every line of every blog is scrutinized. And so that also feels really overwhelming, I think, to people.
Oh my God, I know. So usually what I tell people is whatever you put out there, that you have to be comfortable with it being on the cover of the New York Times. So if you are, if what, it could be political, it could be whatever. Cause people are like, oh, I don't ever talk about politics. I'm like, please have an opinion. It has to be yours. If you are comfortable with what you are saying, being on the cover of the New York Times, because believe me, people do go through whatever and find something. And then they're like, but what about this? Now, I also know too, that it is, I feel like this is just my opinion. I don't necessarily know what to think about all of this, but I'm just going to kind of jump in. But I truly feel like if someone who made a big mistake online or in person, you know, they get canceled, I really wish that at some point someone would maybe have, if they have a public canceling because of something terrible that they did, right? I really hope someday that somebody has a public healing on it where they go, hey, I did something really fucked up. This is what I'm doing to fix it, as opposed to just let it blow over, let it go away. Like, I do feel like that would set so many people free to say, yeah, I did something really fucked up. Or I did something really fucked up back then. I didn't even realize that tweet was there. Let me tell you what I have done since then to change what I do now. Do you know what I mean? Which I feel like, which is why we have to be active in our own lives to be bettering ourselves, so that if somebody does dig up that fucking, I don't know, something you said 10 years ago or what have you, you could be like, yeah, that's where I was at. And let me tell you, this is what I've done since then. And you can point to it and say, I did this. I've donated to this. I've given time here. I've talked to this person. I did some serious soul searching with this group, and this group. That is not where I'm at today. I hope you can understand that I have changed my mind on that topic.
Amen. Oh my God. Oh my God. I just can't even tell you. That just cuts right just fucking through my heart.
And I know what's so, and it's so funny because you mentioned On Our Backs. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't heard that publication in 100 fucking years, which is so good to hear that it still exists. That's amazing. But I feel like what is so difficult is that, like, even in my relationships with people, I mean, I'm old enough now where zero people in my life were trans. You know, 100 years ago. And now I have so many people in my life who are trans. And, you know, the amount of different words that I have said or things that I've done or whatever, like, not to hurt anybody, but like, it was just different. It was what was acceptable. And then it wasn't.
And then it wasn't. Yeah.
Yes. And then I'm like, okay, well, it's not good to say that anymore. And I won't. And I stopped. You know what I mean? And I also know that I can only affect what happens in my corner of the world and in my living room. That is where it all starts, right? So for me, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Michigan in the 70s and 80s. I mean, you know, even with watching the election, you can look to see, you know, these states that are red, and I am from them. I am from racism. I am from sexism. I am from misogyny. I am from violence. And I've gone through so many changes in my life from what I thought back then to who I am now. And I can tell you, all I can do is what I can do in my corner of the world, which means in my comedy world, when I'm booking people on my comedy shows, people of color, LGBTQ, everyone on the spectrum, like, I'm just totally like, every show needs everything, because that's what I can do in my corner of the world. I can give voices to these people. I can give money to these people. Because that's not where I started from. And that's what I've done to fix it and change it in my life.
Well, that's a great note to end on. although I could talk to you forever.
Well, let's keep doing it. I mean, well, this is it. We're friends now. That's it.
I thought we were friends before, Melanie.
We're really gelling up the deal now.
We're gelling it. Okay. The stand-up special is called Wild Animal. It's available to watch on Amazon, on Revry TV, and you can listen to it on all major streaming platforms. Melanie's website is melanievesey.com, which is V-E-S-E-Y, and for her business, promotionalrescue.com. On Instagram and Twitter, she's at Melanie Vesey and at Promotional Rescue. I want to thank so much my engineer and editor, A-Rod, at FTC Designs, who you can follow on Twitter at FTC_designs. I think maybe I should thank Amazon Prime, but I do believe I'm using that clip of your show under fair usage. We'll see if we get that letter from them.
No, it's totally fine. I have rights to my, rights. So it's totally fine. Go crazy. Yeah, go nuts.
New episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. I am on all social media at Tristan Taramino. My show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio because it used to be a radio show and that tells you how old I am. But okay, enough of that self-deprecating talk. I just got a pep talk from Melanie Vesey. So I'm going to stop with that. I'm going to lean into the positive, away from the negative, except sometimes leaning into the negative.
Yeah.
Well, you know. Thank you so much, Melanie.
Oh, you're a gem. I'm so glad that we got to meet and then we're in each other's lives and I get to hear and see everything that you're doing as well. I'm a big fan. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.